Craft Beer Radio pre-show.
Pre-show.
Pre-show. Pre-show. Pre-show. Bloop.
Bloop. What's up? I got to ask you first this time. Haha. What's up?
What's up? Moving the company next week.
Mm-hmm.
Something I've been working on since early June. And it's pretty exciting things.
You're making lots of noises over there.
Not anymore. I'm not. pretty exciting stuff, you know. It's weird because I'm not only. I guess I'm a little excited that we're moving. I mean, it's further from home. It's commute's going to have traffic, you know. But it's exciting that like my plan has all come together.
Sure.
And if I can pull it off without a hitch, you'll be like, yes, Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to Disney World. So that'll be cool. And then
no beer to drink.
Oh, I've had a few beers already, right, so if you want a beer, you can have another beer, but I'm good
until the main show. I need to get something in me, because I've had nothing for a while.
All right, so Greg grabbed a Edmund Fitzgerald. Needs a bottle opener.
Yes, I do.
We're going to open this condom that we got from Round Guys Brewing at the Great American Beer Fest, because it's called Midnight Orchid Basic Black. Oh, and look at that.
It's a black condom.
It's a black condom. Not a brown condom, a black condom.
This is a way to hide how big your dick is. Or small.
You know, it would have been fun to... I don't know who Midnight
Orchid
is.
It doesn't have any goo on it, right? So it's just...
It's a little lubricated, but... You know, do you really trust a condom you got from a brewery?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're using it for. I think that'll work fine to protect against AIDS, but as for a pregnancy stopper, I wouldn't be too.
Well, there we go. Yeah. The first condom on Craft Beer Radio.
Yeah.
Big black condom. Not that big. Average size. You gonna blow it up like a balloon?
Yes, I am.
With the lube on it and everything? Let's see how many breaths it takes. Oh, we're like morning show, like DJ bullshit now. I'm blowing up condoms on the air. Turns gray when you blow it up. It's not midnight black anymore.
Well, that has to do with something called refractive index, and it's complicated. There you go.
It's not my glasser. Condom balloon.
It's got a tip. So that's what we're doing. We're having fun playing with condom balloons this edition.
Well, you know, this is from Round Guy Brewing. And funny story is we started talking to Round Guy Brewing. Scott Rudich is the owner and brewer there. And I knew they're from Pennsylvania Brewery. I knew of them. I had wanted to talk to them. But I'm interviewing this guy, Scott Rudich. Like, who? And he's heard of us, but I'm like, who are you? And blah, blah, blah. And as the interview's going along, I'm like, Scott Rudich. Son of a bitch, this dude's emailed us several times.
Uh-huh.
You know, but he's never, like, said, like, friend of the show. Or he's, you know, he just, you know, played it off like he knew of us. Not that he's participated with us before.
Well,
so.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know. Maybe from a different lens. It might not seem like he's a big part of the show. And well, yeah, no, he's not a big part.
You know, people, I think that people do get an idea that we get more emails than we get.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he might, you know, from a different lens, he might not have felt that he was a significant part of our interactions, where significance is a funny word, because while it's not a lot, it is significant. I remember Scott Rudich emails, you know, so it's significant. And so I felt so bad that I didn't know that a guy that listened to the show, but you know, he was cool with it. And it was like, it was crazy. There was a couple brewers who had started breweries recently who had listened to us from pre-professional brewing. So pretty cool stuff.
It's nice. Yeah. There was at least one time on the floor where somebody came up to me and said, Craft Beer Radio, Colorado Craft Beer Radio, right? I was like, no. Oh, American Craft Beer Radio, right? No. The original.
Just Craft Beer Radio. Aside from Beer Radio, the original.
But what are you going to do? No, it was fun. It was a lot of fun being in GABF, and we'll talk about them more on the main show.
Mm-hmm.
But it was...
Government's running again?
Yes, shutdown is over, thankfully.
Was it $24 billion down the drain?
basically, like all for Ted Cruz's grandstanding and, you know, Tea Party nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Fragile recovery and, oh, let's just fuck it all up.
Yeah, because we hate Obamacare.
I was trying to, like, look at this through a more conservative, fiscal conservative government spending type lens, but I don't know. Maybe I'm too indoctrinated with the liberal ways these days.
I mean,
but, like, you get this whole fragile recovery thing going, and you're going to, like, just put the brakes on for 16 days.
Well, that sort of thinking falls apart because you have those same conservative people who are, like, you know, who are absolutely dogmatic about preserving Medicare and these Medicare, I forget what it was, Medicare, you know, level D or whatever it was that was added mm-hmm. to the budget without having any way of offsetting it. And so, and they're, you know, super concerned about Medicare, which is socialized medicine, because old people vote. But they're not concerned about the ACA because young people don't vote as much. So, it's mm-hmm. like they just want to have it. So they want to have their cake and eat it too, in the sense that they don't really, if it was really about fiscal responsibility, about cutting everything. But no, they just want to cut this Obamacare thing. And it really is therefore about.
That was you this time.
That was meaner. It was really therefore about this president. And about, you know, destroying his legacy as opposed to about anything mm-hmm. for fiscal conservatism. And so it reeked completely of partisanship. And there was nothing at all that had to do, you know, with realistic ideas behind balancing budget. It was just about trying to embarrass the president. And to shut down the government for 3 weeks and approach a budget default simply to embarrass the president is disgusting. It's mm-hmm. a disgusting way to run the country. And I hope people see that.
I was listening to, what was it? There was an interview on NPR with the epitome of conservative columnist guy. What's his name?
George Will?
Yeah, George Will. And the dude carries himself well, right? Like, he was talking about, I think he's a Madisonian, right, or something like that, but he's talking about how, like, you know, this kind of block it, you know, this kind of impedance and stuff that, you know, we're seeing here, it just seems like, you know, they're using the system to their advantage to impede things, you know, isn't a new thing. You know, this happened back in, you know, the first days of the government. Now, granted, maybe that's a conservative talking point to bolster, yeah, it's always been this way, we can do it too. I have to look up a second source to see if this is true, but the way it sounded passed the first sanity test of sounding logical, right? And you know, it made me curious enough to actually want to look into it. Like, you know, government's not supposed to be easy. All this stuff's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be hard to make changes, you know, to do things like that. You know, if it's too easy, you do bad things, right? You got to make it hard. You have to make it.
The change already passed and went through the Supreme Court. And mm-hmm. so
right.
at that point, the argument really does fall apart
mm-hmm.
because now they're just trying to stop legislation from going through. They went through first of all, the legislation passed. Then the Supreme Court decided that it was valid. And then there was an election that was almost mm-hmm. entirely a referendum on this
right.
piece of legislation, and it went through completely. And now they're trying to basically overturn an election.
Well, the problem is rich people only get one vote. Poor people only get one vote. That's the problem.
Yes.
Rich people deserve more votes because they have more money. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. The more money you have, the more votes. It should be a basic, you know, dollar to dollar. Yeah.
That's the problem with this whole thing.
Of course. That
rich people don't get more votes.
Let's be clear here. The ACA website is really poor. You know, I went on it to see what was going on, and I couldn't register. That was the first day. I mean, maybe it's gotten a little bit better, but from what I understand, not mm-hmm. really. It was apparently really poorly designed, and part of the problem is that, you know, not enough funding went to it. But another part of the problem is you got to plan for this sort of shit. And this whole shutdown thing took over all the news from what would have been a disastrous rollout of this ACA because of how horrible the website is and how so there's not many people who've been able to sign up for things.
Right.
So this, I mean, worked completely in the against the conservatives' favor. I mean, if they would have just left it alone, they would have had a major talking point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no way they could have seen that, foreseen that, but still, it is ironic.
No, I mean, bashing the ACA because the website sucks isn't really a valid talking point.
Well, because what they're talking about is how the whole ACA doesn't work on the whole, and this would be a microcosm of that. So you could use it as a valid talking point, or at least to, you know, valid in the sense of it sounds right.
Like you said, I administered a government website in a previous life, and yeah, it's kind of amazing the shit works at all.
This is a government website that is meant to support millions upon millions of people.
It's amazing the shit works at all, which barely does. Booz Allen Hamilton writes this shit in Java, bullshit, crazy, unmaintainable code that you can't touch.
Right.
So, like, when this thing starts melting down, the servers are catching fire, the poor sysadmins that are trying to run this thing have no recourse to do anything. They can't scale it. They can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They wait till next week's meeting to talk to Booz Allen and say, shit don't work. Booz Allen, like, we're back in 6 months with something that does work. You know, it's...
No, it's pretty poor, and I wish that there was some consulting... Like this, the thing is that with the Obama, when the Obama did their whole during the second election when they had the whole computer thing, they had much more money that they were able to spend on this because it was all political campaign money, whereas the government money has to account for every dollar in other situations, and so it becomes a harder thing to do. Anyway, it's not important. I wanted to talk about the irrelevancy of Sarah Palin a bit. Because what it really comes down to is that she's not ever going to run for anything. She has figured out, I think, that her... Because she's, let's face it, she is, at the very least, a political idiot. I can't necessarily say whether she's a complete idiot in all things, but she's a political idiot. But she has this weird sort of thing of support. She quit every job that she's had. She clearly doesn't want a position, but what gets her going is that she gets to be this person of influence just by running around the country and saying things and getting lots of money for that without ever having to actually do any work.
Paris Hilton.
Basically, you know, Paris Hilton without the sex tape. And so...
Well, they're sex tapes, but they're not really her. They just look alike.
So, she... I mean, if you read some of the ridiculous things she said, where it's just word salad. It's absolute nonsense. But she still gets a sizable minority of people to be interested in what she has to say simply because of who she is and what she, quote-unquote, represents. And it's really, but I think that the best thing we can do is just ignore her because no, she's not going to run for anything. She's never going to run for anything. She does not. Not only is it impossible for her to get elected, but even if it were, she would not be able to sustain it because then she had to do something.
Right.
What she is not.
It's a lot easier to be talking head on Fox News.
Oh, much, much easier. Much easier. You see, think about this crazy stenographer.
Crazy stenographer.
When the House bill was passing?
Yeah.
Let me look it up. Let's see if I get the actual audio.
This lacing on this Emma Fitzgerald won't come out of my glass. I've rinsed it like 3 or 4 times now and still residue on the glass.
Here.
Crazy stenographer.
This is when the House thing was being passed. Let's see if I have her the actual words that she said. When the House bill was being passed, some stenographer, that's what I think, some stenographer who, you know, had religious delusions, mm-hmm. came up and started to talk on the Senate floor, or on the Congress floor. And let's see if we can get exactly.
So she hijacked the microphone, huh?
Yeah, basically. Okay. Here we go. Come on, work.
She had music, too.
He will not be mocked. He will not be mocked.
Don't touch me.
He will not be mocked. The greatest deception here is this is not one nation under God. It never was. Had it been, it would not have been. No. It would not have been. Constitution would not have been written by Freemasons.
She's being dragged off.
Against God. You cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve two masters. Praise be to God.
Okay. It's on Twitter. You cannot serve two masters. I didn't know where that came from. Now I know where it came from.
So here's the thing that strikes me as odd. There were actually, even on like Fox News and stuff, there were people that, you know, the Fox News morning show, they were supporting this woman, saying, well, you know, hey, she thought she had things from God, so she was saying what she felt. And it's like, if she was Muslim, would they have said the same thing? If she said, praise be to Allah, et cetera, would they have said the same thing? No, just because she, you know, was, just because her leanings were Christian, probably not even towards her, towards their version of Christianity, just a Christianity. Yeah. And the idea that somebody like that could be available to be a stenographer on the House floor. Mm-hmm. And get through psychological things or whatever you think you need to do in order to get there, and then just be yelling this religious nonsense. That's 7 or 8 steps away from somebody bringing a bomb in there.
Probably less.
Yeah.
I mean, basically she's saying the Constitution is illegitimate because it's written by Freemasons.
Right. And that what's happening, you know, is against Jesus, essentially, and all this other stuff. So it's the same sort of thing. It's the same kind of religious fervor that has these Tea Partiers and has these people in this idea. And it's dangerous that people refuse to acknowledge that it's the same kind of religious fervor and that it can get out of hand is worrying to me.
Yeah. I mean, you hear, listen to that and you could see her with a suicide vest on doing, mm-hmm. at the end of that rant, kaboom, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm unpleased, not just simply because it happened, but because it's being glossed over. And at first there was like, well, Tia's mental problems, and then there's people who saying, well, no, she felt the Holy Spirit, and so she says she's perfectly fine, and then people are going with that. She just felt the Holy Spirit.
Well, you know, God, you're allowed to have God make you do irrational things, but once you do, you should be revoked all your security privileges.
Well, you're allowed to do irrational things, period. And then once you do, it's not about who makes you do rational things. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that rational things happen. I wanted to tell you about a podcast. I think I may have told you this before, but I haven't elucidated on it. Hardcore History. Highly recommend you listen to it. Dan Carlin. Really great stuff.
I listened to a couple episodes, but they didn't... Maybe I was listening to the wrong episode. I listened to 2 episodes, and they were talking about, like, Turkish something or another, and it just didn't grab me. I just couldn't get into it, so...
I love how he puts in... You know, he makes it into a story, and he really does a good job of sort of explaining the rationale from each place. And then he has a degree in military history, and so he really does, whenever battles occur, he really does a great job of describing the battles and how they worked.
No, I've been meaning to go back and check it out. I figured I just wasn't listening to the best episode, the most engaging episode, because I wanted to find a great history podcast.
It's a great history podcast. Highly recommend it. Listen to some other stuff then. I mean... I think it's amazing. I'm in the middle of it listening to this one about the downfall of Rome. I just listened to the one about the Spanish-American War called The American Peril. There's a lot of really interesting stuff.
Okay.
Hail to the Redskins.
Hail to the Redskins. I've been out of pop culture this week. I've been working single-mindedly on the move.
Well, this has not necessarily been just this week. This has been throughout a lot of weeks where people are saying it's about time that the Redskins lose that name. What do you think?
Until I was about 20 years old, I thought the Washington Redskins were in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes more sense. Indians out there? To me? A little bit?
What?
A little bit? Because Washington, D.C., Indians, what?
That's not why people think it's a bad name.
Well, no. Give me a second here.
All right.
Give me a second
here. I'll give you a second here. You're digging yourself a hole.
I don't know if I'm digging myself. Yeah, I guess I'm digging myself a hole, but let me bring it around. You think Wyoming, Washington, you know, maybe not Washington. You don't think of too many Indians in Washington, but, you know, as a younger person out west, Indian names kind of make sense. Slur or not, right? But Indian name in Washington, D.C., outside of Maryland and Virginia, Indians were, you know, pushed out of there so, so long ago, prior to the whole...
I don't understand.
You don't know where I'm going.
No, I don't know where I'm going.
Just want to get into the whole racist part of it.
Yes, that's why it's not because, you know, hey, these guys weren't in Washington for a long time. It's because Redskins is a slur. In the same way, you know, black skins would be a slur, or yellow skins if they were Asian or something like that would be a slur, or pink skins. It'd be really ridiculous. The idea that, you know, we're okay with Redskins because there isn't enough of an Indian population to make too much noise is...
Okay, let me play a little bit of devil's advocate here.
All right, go ahead.
So, when you're talking about African-Americans,
mm-hmm.
African-Americans okay, black is okay, Negro's not okay.
Right.
Nigger's not okay.
Right.
But black is black without the word skin.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's a cultural thing. It will change. You know, black for sometime in the early 90s, late 80s, black wasn't good and you had to use African American. And then it got black was okay. So it's you have to adjust with the culture. You can't just say, oh, well, that's what you called yourselves then, and so now it's still okay. It's like, I hear that, I see that on old, you know, old people sites. Like, why can't I call them colored people? They still have the NAACP, and that has colored people in the name. I should still be able to call them colored people. And it's like, no, the culture changes. You have to adjust with the culture. So I really think your point there is indefensible.
I wasn't trying to make a point. I was trying to explore a facet.
Well, there's my response.
Okay. I get people's arguments. Me personally, I'm a horrible person, and I don't see Redskin as a horrible biting slur, but maybe that's just
if you were a part of that group, then you might.
I see slant eyes, ragheads, camel jockeys as horrible biting slurs. I just, because of my experiences over the last 30 some years, I don't see Redskin as in the class, right?
What if, and so we're going off on a tangent. You grew up Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if there was a team that called themselves, what if Notre Dame, big Catholic school, decided that the name of their team, instead of being Notre Dame, would be the Boy Rapers. And in a sense, there was a cultural thing that all Catholics were Boy Rapers. Even though you don't associate yourself as a Catholic, all Catholics, your family who are Catholic, and you who are not Catholic are quote unquote a boy raper. Just in general. Oh, you're one of those boy rapers. In the same sort of way that I grew up Jewish, you know, if I hear someone going around saying kike, even though I'm not Jewish now, it still gets me bothered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the idea that this sort of prejudice is still exists would still bother you, wouldn't it?
I get your point. I get that, you know, I wouldn't... Would I oppose a name change? No. Am I up in arms that they're the Washington Redskins? Other than, why does Washington, D.C. have a mascot of an Indian, which I can't comprehend why? I have a bigger problem with that than the slur Redskin. That's just me. I'm a horrible person.
The best response, ironically, that I saw from this was from PETA. They suggested not changing the name, but changing the mascot over from an Indian to a Redskin potato.
Which makes as much sense in Washington, D.C. as an Indian.
So if they just made it a potato, then Redskins will be fine because they're Redskin potatoes and you know, they're good. They're not quite good for mashing, but they're really good for other stuff.
I don't think they sell jerseys. I don't think potatoes will sell jerseys.
It doesn't have the same kind of... Our team is a potato. I mean, what they were trying to get is you know, brave warriors, mm-hmm. and like the Braves, mm-hmm. or the Cleveland Indians, stuff like that. Even those are kind of, mm-hmm. you know, are skirting pretty big lines. It's just the Redskins is the one that actually is not just has that affection, but also has a slur involved in it.
I mean, okay, so if we want to... So now I'm playing marketing company for mm-hmm. Washington Redskins. Isn't it an easy change to name them over to a fierce tribe name? I mean, maybe they can't use a tribe name, but call them the Cherokees. Call them the Algonquins.
I mean, the only reason why people are resisting, I think, is because, you know, they're used to the name Redskins. They don't want to change the name Redskins. It's not because... I don't think people are necessarily resisting because they love the idea of insulting Indians. It's just that there's a natural resistance people have to change, and especially things that have been there their entire life, and for that to change, it seems almost like an attack on them as much as the name itself is an attack on this group. It's like, you know, hey, you're attacking my...
So are Indians really pissed off about this?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And they deserve to be. I mean, if it was called the Washington Kikes, Jews would have reason to be upset about it, even if it was there for 200 years or whatever. I mean, it's not been there for 200 years, but you get my point.
But see, Jews have the resources to change such a thing. The Indians don't.
I don't know. They love casinos. There you go. See, there's my...
Yeah, that's my solution. Change it over to a relevant tribe of the Virginia, Maryland, you know, area.
Change to Choctaw.
That was Oklahoma.
All right.
But, you know, whatever was relevant to the area.
Yeah. Iroquois?
And if there was no... Yeah, Iroquois probably... I think they were mostly East Coast. Yeah, Washington, Iroquois. Keep the same logo. Even though the logo's a bit racist.
Yeah. Too. Chief Wahoo for the Indians. That's a real racist one. Yeah, so that's the thing. The Steelers actually won a game while we were...
Woohoo! It was on an airplane they won.
Yeah. I was in Denver for a lot longer than I expected to be.
Long time at the airport, huh?
Long time at the airport. I didn't want to drink anything either, so it was like I didn't have much to do. Just sitting around.
I was to the point where I was like, I really don't want to drink. Yeah. Not just to keep my wits, but just because, like, I had enough beer.
Exactly.
Enough beer.
I had plenty of beer over the course of those 4 days.
So you dropped me off, right? There was two people that I could see in the whole queue.
Oh, really?
In security. You know, there was three of us going through security at the time of the morning. It was like Airport even open?
So what time I drop you off? About five something?
No. Seven? It was like four.
Four.
Maybe a touch after four. It was before 4:15. I went through security, no line at all.
Yeah.
And when I was like on the other side of the metal detectors looking back, there was probably about a group of like 8 or 10 people going through. But no line.
It took about a half hour for me to get through. So that'll give you an idea. I mean, I got in about 2:30.
Okay.
So yeah.
Well, I left last time. I only have a clear recollection of leaving the airport once, even though I've done it. Twice now that I've done it three times. But the one time, it was the whole way through the queue, up over the hill, you know, up the escalator, and I was in line right behind Garrett Oliver. And I don't know how long it took. I would say about 40 minutes or so.
Did you say hi to him?
I mean, we chatted just a little bit. I didn't want to monopolize his time or anything like that. So it was exciting because I wanted to be at the gate 2 hours before boarding or 2 hours before departure so I could, get listed on the flight.
Right.
And
right.
I got there in plenty of
Buddy time. Pass has that advantage. Yeah.
And then, basically you're like, I could sit down in a seat, but what if someone gets in line before me? So I'm standing right at the counter for like, an hour, a little over an hour, but. I was listening to Secure Now podcast, but just stand at the counter, lean against the counter, so no one could jump me in line.
Cool.
Got all my flights. There was enough empty seats. Not a big deal. It's nice when you fly early like that.
There's a lot of that's just pretty early.
Mm-hmm. It was a 7:10 departure, so
and I got to go back and sleep, and then I went down to Denver and ran around. I was really upset because none of those street vendors were open on Sunday. Mm.
I forgot to tell you about that one breakfast place, too. The one where I had the great breakfast one morning. But I'm sure you found something worthwhile.
Yeah. I went to, the bento box place. And
it's okay.
So, that's interesting.
Lots of dispensaries out in Denver.
Yes, but we could not get some. We cannot get what we wanted, which was some marijuana for Jeff.
Next year, it's going to be a whole new world.
Next year will be different because the reason why we couldn't is because while the thing passed, it didn't take effect until January. So you still had a medical dispensary card, which means that you had to be a Colorado resident.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't go in there and just say, "Hey, give us some marijuana." That will take place next year.
If I'm allowed to go next year.
If we're allowed to go next year, we'll do that. I have more stuff covered, but we can talk about them on the post show.
Okay.
I want to talk about this craft beer versus home brewer thing that we had about whether those two terms have become more nebulous, especially in light of the stuff that's been happening.
Okay. Home brewer? Did I forget something?
The machine.
Oh, the Zymatic. Okay, mm-hmm. yeah, okay.